Welcome into College Golf Talk. This week, we had to call a little bit of an audible. No Steve Burkowski this week. Both him and I are in Florida, hunkering down as we have a Category 4. It might be Category 5 by now. Hurricane barreling towards us. Of course, we wish all those in the path, especially the west coast of Florida. We wish them well and pray for their safety. And it's not going to be fun over by us in Orlando either, but hopefully we can get through it, get on a plane this weekend, get over to St. Andrews for our college event next week, the St. Andrews Lynx Collegiate, and flirting with the idea of a live podcast out there as well. Maybe we'll grab a pint of Guinness and record in the Dunvegan or something of that nature. But so had to get a little creative this week. We're recording on a Tuesday afternoon, no results to go over. So I thought instead of getting a current college player, why don't I get a former college player, someone who actually played for not one, but two colleges. So a little bit of double the fun. But Frankie Sappen, the Korn Ferry Tour Championship just wrapped up on Sunday, and Frankie finished third in points to earn his PGA Tour card. Your priority ranking, Frankie, is going to be pretty high. First off, thanks for joining us. And has it sunk in yet that you are now a PGA Tour member?
Yeah, no, thanks, Brentley. I appreciate you having me on. And I definitely think it has. You know, I was able to solidify my card back in Nashville. So I think, you know, once they told me, you know, I had locked up my card, it's taken some time to sink in. But the celebration at the Tour Championship was pretty special. I had some close friends and family there. So that was a ton of fun. But yeah, it was a great year. I think, you know, once Matt McCarty sealed the number one spot after Columbus, you know, you're really just trying to get as high as you can. And I enjoy playing good golf, as many of us do, and just wanted to kind of keep the pedal down as much as I could, and happy with how I closed out the year with a win and then a top five at the Tour Championship. So looking forward to next year. And like you said, yeah, we'll have a pretty good priority ranking.
Now the card that they give you is pretty cumbersome. Like it's heavy. Mm-hmm. Like it feels like it definitely means something when they hand you that and you walk, past that, those fireworks of some sort by that tour bound signage. Do you have flashbacks? Like what's going through your head at that point? Are you thinking back to, you know, yourself at 5 or 6 years old and getting into the game? What are you thinking of as you're making that final walk kind of into professional or into the PGA Tour, so to speak?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a little bit of that. I think, you know, like I said, in Nashville, when I was told that, you know, I have enough points where I locked up my card, I think that's when I thought more of things like that. And then this time around, it was more, all right, I want to be doing this at the next level as well. You know, just picturing myself, you know, winning PGA Tour events and major championships. And I think that's always been the dream for me. And this is just a step along the journey. But yeah, it was really special. And then, you know, Alexander Baldwin has been fantastic on Korn Ferry Tour with just everything. They've done such a wonderful job with, you know, some courses and taking care of their players. So I think really just trying to thank everyone from the Korn Ferry Tour that did a superb job the last couple of years for not only myself, but my family, just making us feel incredibly welcome. And just, you know, it's been a great 2 years. I think, you know, I was a very disappointed when I didn't get my PGA Tour card after the season last year. And looking back, I think it might've been one of the best things for me in my career. So yeah, I think just realizing that a lot of the hard work and long nights, early mornings, they definitely pay off in the long run. So I think more just looking back to the work that not only myself, but my team has put in to get to this point is pretty special.
So we're going to get into your college career, but first let's go to the start, your origin story. Now, mm-hmm. You're a Minnesota kid, born in Minnesota, spent a lot of time in Scottsdale as well. How does a Minnesota kid get sucked in by golf and not say hockey?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think a lot of it just goes back to my dad. He had some time when I was young, thankfully, and was blessed just to to hang out with him as much as possible when I was, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old. And, you know, thinking back to those days, we really played a ton of sports. He wanted to introduce me to everything and just kind of let me pick whatever I loved the most. And for me, that was, you know, I loved putting. I loved getting the ball in the hole. And, you know, for, I guess golf wise, that's really how it started. We lived on a golf course and we'd go out in the evening and I'd roll putts around the cup. And, you know, back then I was, you know, I was basically doing the clock drill, but at the time I wasn't doing any drills or anything. It was more just the love of, you know, getting the ball in the hole and seeing it disappear. And so growing up, I always played football and obviously golf. And those were kind of the two things I did. And then we were fortunate enough to be able to spend some winters in Arizona, which allowed me to play a little bit. But, you know, I had two sisters and both my parents are from Minnesota, and I don't think they enjoyed being up in the snow for, you know, 4 to 6 months every year being hunkered down. So I think, you know, having the time to be in Arizona was not only good for myself and my golf game, but just our family as well. Just gave us a little bit more opportunity to be outside and play sports and be very active.
Now, you played football until what, shortly before middle school or maybe early into middle school? What was the decision like giving that up?
I knew I wasn't going to be like incredibly big and I was never all that fast.
Well, what are you now? You're like 6'2", 6'3", 195.
I'm about 6 foot, probably 190. So okay. If I would have kept playing, I would have had to play like quarterback or I'm actually a decent kicker. I used to kick in the Alabama indoor all the time, but, I think just knowing me, at least having a little bit more understanding of kind of where I was at in the world of golf at that age and football, you know, it was funny cause growing up I was really, really good at football. I enjoyed it. And, you know, I would set the clubs aside for 4 or 5 months a year and really dive into it. So I ended up, you know, getting pretty good at it, but at the same time, I kind of always knew where my heart was. And, I just felt like, you know, God blessed me with an ability to play the game of golf. And it was just something that I wanted to pour into as much as possible. And at that time we started to spend a little bit more time in Arizona throughout the year. We were probably in Arizona more like 9 months and then Minnesota for the summers. And, you know, they play football when it's 110 degrees outside and that didn't seem all that exciting to me. So kind of decided to focus on golf and then really just kind of did other sports. I did some flag football, some basketball, some soccer. But that was more just to kind of take a little break in the off season from golf. But yeah.
Now your dad's told me a story in the past, like kind of one of his earliest memories of you. He still has that vision of like you as a kid, like kicking the back of a seat on an airplane, like going to a golf tournament, like your legs like you're so short that your legs don't even like hang properly off the seat, so you're just like excited, you're ready to go, you're anxious. What's your earliest memories of playing golf? Is there something that still sticks out kind of like that?
Yeah, I think, you know, two of my favorite events when I was really young were what I would call more the majors when you're, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old, which looking back, you know, you think they're the world back then, but now it's just funny how much we build things up in our head. But it would have been Junior Worlds and then the US Kids World Championship would be kind of my majors. First memories.
Those are the majors.
So man. They are the majors, but I mean, you know, when you're 6, 7, 8 years old, you think it means the world, but looking back, I think it's all just learning experiences for, you know, for the future. And so I remember a lot of those tournaments. I remember my dad waking me up and like him almost pretty much carrying me to the car in Minnesota. And we'd have tournaments, like 1 day tournaments all around Minnesota and some in Wisconsin. And I would just sleep in the car. He'd probably drive 2 hours and then basically wake up and go to the first tee and play. So tournament wise, that's kind of what I remember. I vaguely do remember kind of walking. We lived kind of on top of this hill and would have to walk down to, I believe it was the 13th green. And yeah, I vaguely remember kind of walking down there and hitting putts with him. But tournament wise would have been probably those two tournaments.
One of our biggest demographics, or probably the biggest demographic of this podcast, are junior golfers, their parents. What's now, I know like the recruiting process has changed a little bit since you went through it. But what's one thing you wish you had known when you were 14, 15, 16 years old, that you didn't know back then before you ended up making your college decision?
Yeah, I think, you know, if I were to go back and do it all over again, there's not much I would have changed. And I'm pretty certain I probably would have gone where I went. You know, I think it's important, you know, when you are in that recruiting process, you know, a big portion of your time is going to be spent with your teammates. I mean, that's typically who you're going to be rooming with your freshman year and likely throughout your entire career. And then you'll be practicing, working out, going to class, you know, traveling with all those guys. So I think your teammates are really important. Coach is obviously very important as well. And then, you know, facilities are important, but I wouldn't say it's the end of the world to have, you know, the world's greatest facilities. I think, you know, when I was at Florida Gulf Coast, you know, I would by no means say we had the best facilities, but I thought, you know, the course we played was really good. And I thought it sharpened my skills to where when I turned pro, I felt ready. So I think, you know, it's funny because a lot of the best athletes in the world, whether it's golf or other sports, don't always come from, you know, the perfect conditions for practicing or anything like that. You kind of just develop it. And I think your love for the game tends to just kind of be something that comes into fruition over time. So I really think it's mainly the people and, you know, who inspires you to get better and wants like what's going to make you wake up in the morning to get after it, whether it's, you know, going to the gym or going to practice.
It's interesting you say the facilities sometimes don't matter. I mean, you look at kind of big school, small school and football and someone like Josh Allen, granted came from a big mid-major, but, you know, by no means was he from Alabama or Ohio State or something like that. Now you went the opposite direction. So you're at Alabama and you transfer to Florida Gulf Coast. Normally guys are going the other way. They're going from a school like FGCU to an SEC school, Big Ten or Big Ten school, Big 12, ACC, so on and so forth. Talk us through that decision. When did you know that you wanted to transfer? And ultimately, how did you decide that you were going to be an Eagle and play for Coach Dana down there in Fort Myers?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I think it was definitely a decision that I had some time to reflect on it because I showed up to school in, I guess it would have been the fall of 2018 and was there for 2 years. So then, you know, my second year, my sophomore year, halfway through the spring, pretty much actually right when I was leaving for spring break is when COVID happened. So then basically I never went back to Alabama. So I spent a lot of time at home and just kind of reflecting on the past 2 years. And, you know, I loved Alabama. I still do. I'm still a big Crimson Tide fan to this day. I'm going to a game at the end of October and really looking forward to it and still close with a lot of those guys on the team we had. But yeah, I think like I mentioned earlier, you know, what's going to inspire you to be the best you can become. And, you know, after being there for 2 years, we had a great team my freshman year and that was a lot of fun. And, you know, we had some injuries on the team and it got a little difficult. And, I think, you know, I didn't love the game at that time as much as I did in high school and, kind of going into school. And I, you know, 2 years in a row where I really struggled in college events, like specifically college events, and then would go play in the summer and play really well in, you know, I guess what you'd call the elite amateur type series events today. So I think, you know, just after having that happen a couple times, it seemed like it was probably just not the right fit for me and my family. And, you know, it took a lot of time and it definitely was one of the tougher decisions I've had to make in my life. But, you know, thankfully I had a couple buddies on Florida Gulf Coast's golf team that were going there from Minnesota. And, you know, after being at a school for 2 years, like I said earlier, I think it's really important just to go somewhere where you feel like you're going to get better, have fun. And, you know, I love team golf. I love watching the Ryder Cup, the President's Cup. I even loved college golf, being on a team. And, you know, some of my fondest memories of the game and playing the game were probably in high school, with our high school team. So I love the team aspect of golf. However, I think golf's a unique sport where, you know, it really is an individual game. And when I say that, I think, you know, there's a lot of people around me that have helped me get to the point I'm at today, whether it's, you know, caddy, parents, family, agent, assistant, different people like that, where, you know, you are on that sort of team. However, I think there are things where, you know, I'm the only one hitting the golf shot, to where I think it's tough to have everyone do similar things in the gym or practicing or certain things like that, where I wanted to go somewhere that allowed me a little bit more freedom to kind of not necessarily set my own schedule, but to a degree have my own practice routines. And I think that FGCU offered me that. And, you know, I think it's important to be close with your teammates and ideally be practicing at the same times as them. But, you know, everyone has a different body. Everyone has different deficiencies, different strengths, weaknesses, whatever it may be, where, you know, I may not have to be chipping for 2 hours like someone else. And, you know, maybe it's better for me to spend time on the range and hit certain shots that I know I'm going to have for that next tournament. So I think that's something that, you know, FGCU offered me a little bit more of that, which was intriguing. And then, like I stated previously as well, I think I was at a point with the game of golf that I didn't love it, as much as I knew at the time I wasn't feeling, as inspired. And I think it was time to just kind of switch it up, and I'm thankful that I did. And, I'm not sure I would be sitting with you here today if I did.
I think the only thing required of you at Florida Gulf Coast was you have to set aside about an hour a day to talk rankings with Coach Dana.
Yeah.
Like stat ranking or something like that, and just listen to him project and figure out where you guys are going to end up on the bubble and so on and so forth. But what's the biggest alligator you've seen out there on your home course and in school? Because obviously Old Corkscrew is in the middle of kind of like a marshy, like Everglades light kind of area. I've played it. I've seen some big gators. What do you have, any close encounters?
Close encounters. Yes. You know, the first hole you're kind of, you know, you're by the range, and then as you get out to hole, 3, 4, 5, you kind of go out in the Everglades and then kind of swing back around. And when you're out at that corner there, there's a lake. And the lake kind of just goes up into the bunker, as a lot of Florida courses just kind of have the sand and then the water goes up into the sand.
Yeah.
And there's a few times where if you hit it in the left bunker on, it's a short drivable par 4, hole 4. If you hit it in the left bunker over there, you're going to have to watch out, because, you know, I forget which months it is, but there's about a month where there will be 4 or 5 of them, and they're probably at least 8-10 feet long, just chilling over there. I think there was one, I forget, we had a name for it. I'll have to text my buddies, and I forgot what it was, but he was a big boy.
Like talking 12 feet, something like
probably,
that.
Probably, yeah. But he was thick too. Like didn't want to
mess. He was a burly boy. He could have played for Coach Hibble at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Do you kind of look back and kind of look at the landscape right now in college golf and wish that, you know, maybe you had been a part of this NIL craze that's going on now? Or at the same time, are you fortunate that all that confusion and all that ruckus, like, you're not a part of?
I'm almost more thankful that I'm not a part of it. I think, you know, I definitely think there's a lot of things that are good about it. However, I think it definitely can cause a lot of distraction. And but, you know, I think if I was a part of it, I would be happy I was a part of it. I'm not sure. But I think that, you know, I kind of left school right as it was starting to become a thing. And I think a lot of, you know, maybe not necessarily in golf, but a lot of, you know, bigger income sports like football, basketball, it could be a good bit of a distraction and probably the reason why someone might go to a certain school over another. But who's to say this wasn't happening before? But who knows?
The McDonald's bags full of cash.
Yeah.
I'm sure you had a ton of those at Florida Gulf Coast.
Yeah, all the time.
So you turn pro, but you don't do it as quickly as maybe some of your peers. Mm-hmm. Talk us through the decision to remain amateur, play one last summer of amateur golf, and then turn pro, go through Q school and go through Q school well. I mean, you lost to mm-hmm. two combined guys the first three stages to play your way to final stage and get on the Korn Ferry Tour. But why was that route more beneficial for you than turning pro right away?
Yeah, I think for me, you know, making that transfer pretty much right as PGA Tour U was becoming a thing, making the transfer from Alabama to FGCU definitely hurt me in that aspect of, you know, strength of field in our schedule, which we were able to get into some good events later on, kind of early in my senior year. And we had a decent schedule to where, you know, if I would have won out or went out and maybe had a college career like Stephen Fisk at Georgia Southern, I would have been able to, you know, maybe get inside the top 10, top five. But yeah, I didn't have, you know, exceptional seasons by any means my junior and senior year. And however, you know, our team, we did a really good job as a team, you know, both those years. We just missed out on making it to regional my junior year and then made it to regional my senior year. And I think that was the first team in FGCU history to make it to a regional without having won the conference championship. Yep. So that was pretty special as a team. That was a ton of fun. And, you know, they've been able to build on that the last couple of years too. I think they just missed out again as well. However, I'm happy with, you know, what Dana has done with that program. And, you know, I think Van Holmgren, he's a kid a year older than me. I know you know of Van. But yeah, it's just really cool to see that program kind of, you know, turn around and have a few nice years. But I think for me, after my senior year, I wanted to play the Elite Am Series. I knew if you, I think that was actually the first year of that as well. I know if you finished one, I think you got into a Korn Ferry event and at the other
summer of 22, I think, right?
Yeah, it was summer of 22. At the same time, I think I just wanted to get a little bit more golf under my belt, probably a little bit more individual golf under my belt. And then also with the opportunities of the Western Amateur and the US Amateur, I know you go and play well and, you know, possibly win one of those. It kind of changes the start of your professional career. So I think it was more just wanting to close out my amateur career properly. And I felt like, you know, having the US Amateur be my final event would be a great way to just kind of after that, know that it was going to be my last event and then just turn pro after that.
You mentioned Van Holmgren. For those who don't know, Van's probably, what do you like, 6'7", 6'8"?
At least 6'7". I think he tries to say 6'8". I think he's 6'7¾".
Well, but I mean, it's only natural. You get taller every time someone asks you about it. But if Florida Gulf Coast had a football team, if you were the quarterback, you would want him as your left tackle because he, or maybe a tight end. I don't know how
athletic. I
think athletic.
I go tight end.
He's pretty athletic, so.
He is pretty athletic, yeah. I don't know. I would argue I'm a little more athletic. He's just got the size, but, you know, I think tight end's a good spot. His hands are pretty good.
Now, speaking of football, you play out of Merido in Dallas. So would that be probably your home club?
It is. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you've worn the hat out there on the Korn Ferry Tour this year. Another member out there is Tony Romo. I think maybe Scotty gets out there every once in a blue moon. Jordan used to be out there quite a bit. What's your regular game out there? Who are some of the guys that you're rubbing elbows with and maybe taking their money, maybe depositing into their bank accounts?
Yeah, it's ideally it's, you know, a lot of withdrawing from their account going into mine.
That's good.
But yeah, so this year, you know, a lot of my buddies or guys that I typically play with are on the PGA Tour. So I haven't played with a ton of guys this year, but and then, you know, it's funny, all our schedules are kind of always conflicting and always have stuff going on. But I think this fall or this winter, we'll probably get some good games. But when I think back, I had a couple good games. I play a lot with Davis Riley. He and I are pretty close. And then, you know, I've played with Romo, I think two or three times, and, you know, been on the winning side every time. So that's been nice. But yeah, we'll get like the Pearson and Parker Cootier out there, Cooper Dossi. I'll play with Will Zalatoris here and there. And then Kevin Doherty. Let's see.
Bryson's, you know, been out there a little bit recently,
he
right?
He has. Yeah. I've seen Scotty and Jordan out there. You know, we're Bryson. Yeah. Bryson did the break 50 with Romo out there. I think that was a week before they hosted the live event, but yeah, I saw them out there playing. So yeah, we get a lot of guys. I think, you know, the core group would probably be the Cootie brothers, Cooper, Dossi, Davis Riley, myself, Kevin Doherty. I don't know. It kind of changes every week. And then we get some guys coming in town and playing or go across town and play their course. So it's just kind of I wish we had kind of a group of 4 to 8 guys that we played with a little bit more often, but at the same time, it gets tough. And then, you know, when you're not playing or not in season, I think downtime is really important, especially with how much we play, to where, you know, it just gets tough. Taylor Moore is out there as well, so we'll see him a fair amount too.
And Arkansas Razorback, big win for them on the football field against Tennessee this past weekend.
Yeah, I was surprised
going back and not a good week for Alabama, so right. I wasn't going to bring
not
that
gonna,
up.
We weren't going to talk about that, yeah.
But anyways, you mentioned Bryson, the break 50. I'm surprised he hasn't had a guy who's shot 58 in competition this year maybe take a stab at it with him. Now, it was interesting. I thought the coolest thing that you talked about that week when you shot 58 at the Veritex Bank down in Arlington earlier this year on the Corn Ferry Tour is something supernatural maybe happened with your vision. Has that happened since? And can you explain for our listeners kind of why you go through this sort of tunnel vision, blurry eyed, like in the zone type thing that I think it's probably only about half human.
Yeah. It was definitely something that I wasn't, I don't think I had happened to me before. The only other time thinking back would have been US amateur four ball, at Winged Foot. I made like a 30 footer to send our match to extra holes. If I miss it, we lose. If I make it, we go to extra holes. And that I remember making the putt. And I don't remember anything until we were on the playoff hole tee box. So that was like straight blackout. I don't remember any of it. But this was odd. I think I had probably 4 or 5 holes to play. And, you know, at this point, I knew how many under I was at. You know, I forgot the par of the course. I didn't know if it was 71 or 72. But at the time I knew I think I was probably 12 under. And, you know, everything outside of where I was looking at, which would have been basically my target. And at that point, it was pretty much the pin on every hole because I hadn't hit that many great golf shots in one round to where I was just trying to keep the pedal down as much as I could. But yeah, everything outside, like peripheral type vision, was incredibly blurry. And the only thing that was clear was my target and, you know, where I was looking. So that was an experience where, you know, I was aware of it, but it felt pretty cool to where I was kind of just trying to ignore it and pour into it a little bit. And I know Rory talks a little bit about, you know, kind of the flow state and stuff like that. And I think that would definitely be a time where, I mean, I had to have been in that. But yeah, that was a pretty neat experience. And I actually did have it similar to that in Columbus when I won a few weeks ago. However, I think it was a little different because we got some pretty crazy winds blowing in, like 35, 40 miles an hour, just for about, 5 minutes. And it blew a bunch of dust, and I think I got a ton of my eyes, and I think that was part of it.
Wind ate it.
Yeah, I was hoping it was more flow state, but the shots I was hitting wouldn't result in me being in the flow state at that time, but I was able to get the job done.
So probably that course, the course you played this past week in French Lick, two of the more, I would say, penal, more difficult, more PGA Tour style golf course than maybe what you guys normally play on the Korn Ferry Tour. Do you feel like maybe there are some guys in this class of 30 going to the PGA Tour next year? Do you feel like there's some guys that might play better next year on the PGA Tour than maybe they even did on the KFT because of that discrepancy in style of golf course?
I do. Yeah. I do. I think PGA Tour courses set up probably a little bit better for guys who hit it longer and who have a really good short game. I think, around the greens is going to be a little bit more penal, and missing on the wrong side is going to be more difficult at the next level. I think we play a lot of courses where, it's driver and a lot of wedges where, you're seeing anywhere from 24 to, I think we had all the way to 31 under win this year, to where, they're not your regular public tracks where they're super easy, but there's not a lot of penalties for, hitting a drive offline or kind of missing the short side, especially at a lot of the courses we play, where I think you'll see a lot of guys who, hit it long and straight and are a consistent iron player and have a good short game. I mean, it sounds simple, but I do think the PGA Tour sets up well for certain guys. I was just texting with him, Jake Knapp. I played with him on the Korn Ferry Tour a good bit last year. And, when he got his card, I had a feeling he would do pretty well. Hits it long, hits it straight. Pretty solid short game, hits his irons well. I think you see guys like that. Max Grieserman had probably the best year out of anyone that graduated. Yeah. He hit it long straight, solid short game, good putter. So I think a lot of those guys have probably a little bit more of an advantage at the next level. But, I think if you understand your game and know your game well, I truly believe anyone can do well. But I think it's just a matter of getting some experience and just trusting what you have and playing your game.
With that in mind, I'm looking at some of your stats right now, some of your better ones on the KFT. Now, we don't get the strokes gained publicly available like we do on the PGA Tour, but you were first in par five scoring this season on the KFT. Mm-hmm. You were third in scrambling. What's one area that you're going to really kind of hone in on these next 3 or 4 months before you get out there for the Sony Open to try to make sure that, getting on the PGA Tour is nice, but you want to make sure that you stay out there and you have success out there?
Yeah, I think for me, it's, I definitely have a tendency to hit some wayward off the tee. So I think, tightening that up a little bit is going to be tremendously helpful. And then, I think I tend to have a lot of really good driving weeks. And whenever I have a good driving week, I almost always play well. So there are a few weeks this past year, I just took driver out of play and hit 3-wood. I love my 3-wood so much. And, some of these courses, they're not super long where you really can get away with it. I think just keeping the ball in front of me a little bit more is something that I wanted to do from last year to this year, and believe I did a better job from last year to this year, and want to keep doing that. And then it's really the same things as I wanted to work on last year at this time as well. Really just kind of dial in irons and wedges, and then keep the driver a little bit more in the goalpost. So those are the only two. I think my short game, scrambling, putting, I believe I can be the best at that, and just keep doing what I'm doing there. And I've had some really good results. And if you look at the stats, I think it's tough to see the strokes gained, but you know, at pretty much most of those stats the last 2 years, I've been, if not inside the top 5 or 10, within the top 20. So I know I'm doing the right stuff there. I think just, you know, tightening things up a little bit, and we should be in a good spot.
Yeah, we saw at the U.S. Open where you made the cut at Pinehurst, tied for 41st. Saw some of the potential there. Well, while you're working on kind of long game stuff, there's going to be a lot of people this offseason that are going to be trying to figure out how to putt, like try to figure out how to just be an average putter. As someone who has, at least in my opinion, always been a great putter, what's the key to being a great putter? Like what works for you? What advice would you give someone that wants to be top 10 in putting on tour like you were last year?
Yeah, I think there's two different types of putters. I think there's more, I would say more field putters, and then probably more linear type putters. So I think for me, you know, I've always been a field putter, and I actually had probably right after the US Open until New Jersey of this year. I forget how many tournaments it was, but it was probably anywhere from 5 to 8 tournaments where I was hitting the ball almost the best I ever have. Was hitting it really, really well and just really struggling on the greens. And you probably can't see that if you look at the tournaments, because I still had some pretty solid results in that stretch, but it was really just because I was hitting the ball super well. And I was just struggling with, you know, my pace seemed to be off, and you know, a lot of the 10 to 15 footers that, you know, I had all day long just work going in, and it seemed like, you know, for me, I thought, you know, something's wrong, I'm not hitting my line, all this stuff. And, you know, I actually switched putters. It's a similar type setup to mine, but it's a mallet. And, you know, that gave me a little bit more consistency on some miss hits. And I noticed my pace got extremely, extremely better, really quickly too. You know, I had a lot of 40 footers that I would roll up there and they'd go a foot past, or 60 footers that I would roll up and they'd be, you know, 2 feet past, where, it just seemed like a lot of those makeable putts got so much easier, just because my pace was so much more consistent that I was able to see the line like I typically do, to where I think, you know, if you want to be a top 10 putter on tour, I think, you know, a lot of people are super concerned with, you know, rolling it end over end or picking a perfect line or green reading. But I think if you really focus on just getting a consistent pace and trusting your instincts in the speed control, I think you'll see a lot of good results there. And, you know, I've spoke with Aaron Baddeley a lot as well, because he's one of the best putters probably almost ever.
At least the last decade or two.
Yeah. And he, you know, he talks about speed, but also kind of, he looks at where he wants the ball to enter the hole, and then we'll draw that back to the ball. And then you kind of just picture a path from there. And, you know, I think there's a lot of similarities, there and in kind of what I do. And, but at the same time, even if you have the perfect line, it's not going to matter if you can't match it up with the speed. So I think, you know, to make it a little shorter, I think, yeah, speed is one of the most important things, if not the most important.
When did you make the switch from the mallet again?
It would have been...
Or to the mallet, sorry.
It would have been right before Omaha. It would have been after... Maybe after Chicago, before Omaha.
Mid-July.
Yeah, right before Omaha. It would have been like the Wednesday before Omaha, and I actually missed the cut in Omaha, but that was like the first week in a while I didn't hit the ball well, and it was my first week with that putter, and I actually didn't make a whole lot. However, it felt like something was brewing, where it felt really good, and, you know, just, I mean, some weeks the ball just doesn't want to go in the hole. But yeah, that week the putter felt good. I didn't make a ton. And then sure enough, the next week I came in second, and I actually didn't even hit it that great. I hit it fine, but I made everything I looked at. And, you know, it's always fun hitting the ball 340. It's fun hitting cool shots, but I don't think there's anything better than making a ton of putts.
Now, I don't necessarily think we need to discuss the reorder category on the tour, because you know, like I said at the top of this podcast, you are third in points. So you're going to have probably your pick of what events you want to play, at least in terms of the open field events, at least into that first reshuffle. But how do you stay competitively sharp these next 4 or 5 months, considering that once you show up in Hawaii at Sony, like, you have to play well? Otherwise, when Valero, when mid-April hits, you could get reshuffled back in that reorder category and then have trouble getting into fields.
Yeah, I think it's a good question. You know, for me, I'm competitive and you know, enjoy competing at golf or whatever it may be. So I think that's one of the reasons that why I wanted to move to Dallas is there's a lot of guys, there's a lot of competition there. So I think for me, you know, I'm going to take probably 2-3 weeks and not do a whole lot. Probably just kind of do some off course stuff that I want to take care of before next year. So I don't have to worry about that. And then once I do that, I'll probably get back to it. And I think we'll have a fair amount of games this off season, just to kind of gear up for the season ahead. But you know, I think for me, I've really learned a lot more about myself, to where it's more important for me to be rested, like eat healthy and be hydrated and just be really inspired and excited to play, as opposed to trying to make things perfect. I was actually talking to my dad earlier today about that. And I told him, it's funny, from last year to this year, I actually felt better with my game last year towards the end of the year. But this year, I knew how tired I got last year, where I actually didn't focus as much on, you know, how my game felt. And it was more just trying to make sure that, you know, I'm well rested. I'm eating good foods to keep me, you know, having energy and stuff like that on the course, to where I think no matter what, it's just all about learning about yourself. You know, there's a big difference from amateur golf to college golf, or junior golf to college golf, and then college golf to professional golf. And, you know, I would like to pride myself on just kind of how I was able to make the transition. And, you know, it's a lot more golf, a lot more travel, to where, yeah, I think just having guys to play with is a big one as well, back home. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll fire up this podcast again, and I'll maybe let you know at this time next year.
You have any vacations planned? Or
I do. Yeah. I'm going to a couple football games. So I got a Lions Cowboys game in Dallas, and then I'm going to the Vikings Lions game in Minnesota the next week. One of my really good buddies, one of my best friends, he's the long snapper on the Lions. So I wanted to catch him for a couple games. It'll be tough though, because I'll have to root for my Vikes when they play against them. But I'll root them on in Dallas, and then we're taking a family trip to Europe in December.
Okay, so at least you're taking an actual vacation instead of just going and seeing a bunch of football games. Now, a huge, yeah, Vikings fan. Mm-hmm. They're 5-0 this week. One of the two, I think, remaining undefeated. Mm-hmm. You're too young for Randy Moss, Chris Carter, those type of guys, right?
Yes. I've seen a bunch of highlights. I think that was 98. We started 5-0 with those guys. And, yeah, I was born in 99, so it was just before me.
I mean, those were the glory days. A lot of my friends, even in Central Florida area, became Vikings fans because of Randy Moss. But who was your favorite player growing up? And is the answer Sam Darnold after this?
It sure looks like it. Sure looks like it. You know,
have we been unfair to Sam Darnold real quick? Like, have we dogged, you know, him for too long? Or
it was funny because when J.J. McCarthy got hurt, a bunch of Vikings fans are like, oh, our season's over, we're done. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't think Sam Darnold was going to be this good, don't get me wrong. But I did say, you know, he hasn't been on a real solid football team yet with weapons around him. I mean, he got drafted 3rd overall, so he was great coming out of college. Got drafted, I believe, by the Jets, which they had nobody at that time. Then got traded to the Panthers. They also had nobody. And then last year spent a year with the Niners and probably learned a lot from their system, learned a lot from Brock Purdy and probably how he plays the quarterback position. And then we brought him in and I mean, he's got two of the best wide receivers in the league. We don't even have TJ Hockenson in right now. Picked up Aaron Jones this offseason, and Brian Flores seems to be cooking up some crazy schemes on defense. So, you know, I haven't been able to watch every game. I've only been able to watch two, which now I'm excited I'll be able to catch more on Sundays. But yeah, we'll see. You know, I'm hopeful, but I don't know.
So, who's your favorite player of all
Oh, that's right. Sorry. I would say probably Adrian Peterson or Antoine Winfield.
time?
Yeah,
Okay.
watching AP
Offense,
when I
one offense,
was.
one defense.
Yeah, I loved. I mean, in my opinion, Adrian Peterson is, if not the best, one of the best running backs of all time. I think, you know, that was kind of prime Frankie Vikings fan like era when I was 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, and he was just dominating. So I remember that. That's probably when I watched the most Vikings games, just because my schedule allowed for it. I mean, I don't have a whole lot going on when I'm eight, but yeah, probably Adrian Peterson. He was the most fun to
I
watch.
spoken like a true Vikings fan, calling Jordan Addison one of the best wide receivers in the league. But
Oh, I'm talking
well,
the duo,
okay,
probably the
okay. Well,
best duo.
I mean, you could pair me with Justin Jefferson, and we'll be top 15
That's
in the
true.
league for
That
sure.
is true.
Well, we could definitely talk about the Vikings for the next like 4 hours, but I've kept you way too long. But I want to end this podcast with, I don't know how big of a goal guy you are, but let's set a goal for you next season in your rookie year on the PGA Tour. Let's set one together on this podcast. Broad, it could be as detailed as you want it. But what's maybe one goal we could set for you?
Yeah, I think for me, you know, even coming into this year, a lot of people talk about goals. I've never had super specific goals. I just kind of have things that are really inspiring and excite me. And one of those things would be teeing it up at Bethpage Black next fall in the Ryder Cup. So I told my caddy that, you know, I think that'd be a good, you know, somewhat of a goal for next year. And, you know, we'd probably have to get off to a good start and get into some of those elevated events early, and then have a good rest of the year. But you know, I like that. I think it's good enough. It definitely would test me, but at the same time, I think, you know, I think that'd be just a really solid one for next year.
I was just thinking like top 25 and strokes gained putting, something like that. But I
No.
love the goal. I love the goal. It's shoot for the stars. And for those listening and thinking, ah, there's no way Frankie Sappin's going to make the Ryder Cup team next year. You're 129th in the world already. Like,
That's
you don't
without this
have that.
past week too. I'll probably go up a little. Probably not
Exactly.
a
So
ton, but a little.
you don't have that far to go to at least get on the radar. So I love the goal, Frankie. If that happens, I will show up to Bethpage and I will wear a Vikings jersey
I love it.
for one of the days, and it'll be great. Well, appreciate it. Always great catching up, and have fun in Europe watching some football, and we'll see you in Honolulu in maybe about 4 months' time.
Yes, sir. I'm looking forward to it. You stay safe down there. And thanks again for having me on. I appreciate it.
We will do our best.